Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Join us today on Advanced for a musical adventure with Mumford & Sons. Hi, friends. Welcome to a brand new article here on Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Naomi, and as always, I'm very excited to be here, particularly because we are starting a new article, our music article for May today. So we're all thrilled to be here for this article. And before I introduce the other panelists for today, I was thinking about how sometimes with music, we tend to always be worried about finding the next big trend. We're looking for what's new, what the latest fad is, and the newest kind of sound. But sometimes some of the more classic sounds can be very timeless and something that can be enjoyed for many, many years. So here to help me talk about a new spin on an old sound, which you can find on page 39 of your May issues. First of all, we have Nathaniel. Welcome.
Thank you. Very glad to be here. Mumford & Sons are one of my favorite bands right now. They're playing music, and I can't wait to talk about them.
Okay. You also are writing an upcoming article for Studio Classroom about them as well.
That is right. The Studio Classroom will also feature an article on them. I hope you all read that too.
Okay. And so why do you like their sound?
Their sound fits right into my favorite genre of music, pretty much folk. I think they're very folky. Of course, there's a lot you could say about their style and genre, but they fit right in there, and I also love their lyrics. They speak right to my heart.
Oh, that's nice. Now, Nathaniel, last time you were on a music article with me, we were talking about Neil Young.
That's right.
And he sort of fits into that genre as well. Do you think that his sound and Mumford & Sons' sound is similar at all or quite different?
Well, I definitely would call them both folk, but they are pretty distinct as well. There might be times where you catch a similar feeling, but mostly they feel quite different.
Okay, good. Well, we'll continue this discussion. I'm glad that you're here to inform us more. Also, someone with a lot of information about Mumford & Sons is Catherine.
Hello again, everyone. I am so excited to be here as well. I am ready to talk about Mumford & Sons.
And I know that you're a big fan.
A huge fan.
Why?
Well, like Nathaniel said, they have a great sound, and the lyrics are also, they're fantastic. It's sometimes like reading a book and listening to some great music.
Okay, that's a really good point. You know, a lot of people who I talk to will say, oh, I like the sound of that group. And I say, well, their lyrics aren't very good. Like they're a little bit negative or maybe just too simplistic. And they'll say, oh, I don't listen to the words. But I'm not sure I always believe that.
I think that's crazy. I think the lyrics are a really important part to any song because that's what it's all about, what they're saying, not just what it sounds like.
Okay, and I think Mumford & Sons, their sound kind of helps you even focus on the words a little more. It seems to me like their music has a way of really bringing out the meaning of the lyrics, maybe more than some styles, where there's like a heavy bass just going the whole time or something like that.
Yeah, I think so. They use, you know, different instruments. It's kind of a different sound than the computerized music. It's all, like our story says, it's handmade. They're playing it for real. They're not using some sort of computer to make the music.
Good. And I think that's what I was sort of trying to get at the very beginning of this program, that it's a bit of a more classic sound.
It is a more classic sound. I mean, look at the instruments that they are playing. There's not a lot of people that use these instruments that much anymore, especially the banjo and the accordion.
Okay, good. Now, since we're talking about their instruments, let's jump right to page 40 a minute. Friends, you can turn over your page to page 40 and take a look. Before we get started on this article, who are the members of Mumford & Sons and what do they play? Can you start us off, Catherine?
Well, first we have Marcus Mumford. He's the namesake for this band, and he is one of the singers, but he also plays the guitar, the drums, and the mandolin.
Now, mandolin you don't see very often, but it's a stringed instrument, and often it's played very quickly.
Yes.
More so than a guitar.
Yes, and it's smaller than a guitar as well.
Okay, good. Who's next, Nathaniel?
Next, Ben Lovett, who sings but also plays keyboards, accordion, drums, and electric guitar.
So what's an accordion?
An accordion is also kind of a key type of instrument that you can kind of fold open and close, and with the air that moves through it, the sound is produced.
It's a very unique sound.
Yes.
And often I think of, like, old Paris, you know, and that's sort of a very romantic sound. Okay, who's next?
Next is Ted Duane. He's also a singer. He plays the string bass and bass guitar, the drums, and regular guitar.
I love the string bass. I think it's such a cool sound. It's nice and deep, and it always adds a lot of character to music, I think. And then finally, Nathaniel?
Country Winston Marshall. They often call him Country Winston, and he plays specifically the banjo most often, but he also plays electric guitar and thinks some other things, too.
Okay. What's a banjo?
A banjo is actually the instrument that you can see on the first page of this article. Winston is the one on the right there when you see all four of them, and he's holding a banjo.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So all of these guys, what stands out to me, of course, there's a great variety of instruments, which I think is great. I mean, it's nice to hear real instruments being played. And it takes extra talent to be able to play something and sing at the same time. But they're also all vocalists. Like, they all sing regularly on these tracks. And there's actually a lot of harmony in their music as well.
I think that's why it makes it fun, is that they're all singing. They're all involved in every part of the playing and musical process and everything.
Good. Okay, well, let's go to page 39 and begin our first reading as we explore more about this band.
A new spin on an old sound. Mumford & Sons' handmade aesthetic is rocking the music world. Describing the latest album from his band Mumford & Sons, Ben Lovett sidesteps much of the language artists often use to talk about their music. He doesn't, for instance, refer to Babel as a bit of creative risk-taking or as the product of divine inspiration. Instead, the 26-year-old keyboardist says that the record was forced out of this internal desire to prove that we have many more songs in us. Mumford & Sons released its debut, Sigh No More, in 2009 and immediately set about touring the world, playing concerts that grew steadily to a scale Lovett called crazy. Last year, it performed before an audience of approximately 75,000 people on the main stage at Coachella.
So our title for this article is A New Spin on an Old Sound. And I think that's an especially fun title considering we're talking about music.
Yeah, I guess when it says a new spin, it might make you think of records that spin as they play. And of course, old sound also fits in with music, being sounds put together, of course.
Yes, so this is a new take, a new way of doing things, but it's still familiar territory. It's an old kind of style of music. And our subheading there, the deck, can you read that for us, Catherine?
Sure. It says, Mumford & Sons' handmade aesthetic is rocking the music world.
When they call it a handmade aesthetic, what do you think that means?
The music they make, it's really played by real instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they make it sound beautiful. So
right. So it's really that it's almost more like a little more like art than you might argue some things are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a little unfair because I think digital music can be art as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different type of art form in a way. And so to call this a handmade way of doing things, I think it works well. But jumping into the article, describing the latest album from his band, Mumford & Sons, one of the members, Ben Lovett, who we mentioned before, is the one who plays keyboards and accordion and so on. What does he do?
He sidesteps much of the usual language. that artists often use to talk about their music. So sidesteps is just basically kind of like avoiding. You walk around something, sidestep it, so you're just not going there.
Okay, so he doesn't like the way people usually talk about his work, it sounds like. It seems like many people use some of the same words to describe it. And he's saying, let's talk about it in a different way. What are some of the ways that people have been talking about this album?
Well, they call it a bit of creative risk-taking, or as the product of divine inspiration. And anything that is called divine inspiration is, people say, it's given to them by God or a higher idea.
Okay. Now, the name of this album is Babel or Babel. You hear it pronounced both ways. So he is not referring to Babel as this kind of product of divine inspiration or something really wonderful. He's not kind of using the same language that most people are. He's talking about it in a different way. And in the next paragraph, he goes on to explain himself.
Yeah, it's interesting what he says. It says it was forced out of this internal desire to prove that we have many more songs in us. So they had made one album. They were touring a lot with this one album. And they were, you know, maybe some people were starting to say, okay, are there any more songs that you can give us now?
Right. And so this internal desire was to do what exactly?
They wanted to show everyone that they could continue performing, that they could make it as a band, I think. Because some bands, they release one or two songs, they're popular for a while, but they may not have staying power. So I think Mumford & Sons wanted to prove that they could stick around.
Right, that's a great point. And I think the contrast is very clear. Because in the first way, you know, talking about something as creative risk-taking, divine inspiration, you kind of get this idea that it just sort of came to them in a dream or something. And he's talking about it like he makes it sound like it was a lot of work, which I'm sure making an album always is. But it's interesting that he's sort of trying to change people's perspective a little and realize, no, this is something we had to really work hard for. But to back up a little bit, how did they start off? We see in that next paragraph, Catherine.
It says that they released their debut and then they just started touring the world. And it says that it got bigger and bigger until, I believe, Ben Lovett calls it crazy. So they gained popularity fast and just kept playing all over.
Okay. What's a debut?
Debut is the first time that you're releasing something. So a debut album is the band's first album, in this case, Mumford & Sons' first album.
Okay. So this one was called Sigh No More, and I believe we have a track from that album, The Cave. Is that right?
Yes, that is right. The Cave was one of Mumford & Sons' first popular songs. It was around for a long time, and you could hear it basically anytime you turned on the radio, I think, I felt.
Okay. Well, let's hear it so we can hear for ourselves what this new spin on an old sound sounds like.
It's empty in the valley of your heart. The sun, it rises slowly as you walk away from all the fears and all the faults you've left behind. The harvest left no food for you to eat. You cannibal, you meat eater, you see. But I have seen the same, I know the shame in your defeat. But I will hold on hope, and I won't let you choke on the noose around your neck. And I'll find strength in pain, and I will change my ways. I'll know.
And maybe you haven't heard anything quite like that before. I think that's one of their great songs, and it definitely did get a lot of play, like Catherine mentioned before. But it's just a really fun sound to that song, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I do really enjoy their sound. I think it's kind of cheerful, but not too happy. You know, some music, sometimes it's so high all the time. The energy is so high, and the mood is so happy that I get a little frustrated, but I feel like they're able to be quite joyful in their music without being kind of over the top.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fun to listen to. It, you know, I personally, I did get a little tired of that song, but it's coming back to me now.
So. Well, and the reason why I think you got tired of it is because it was such a big hit. And that's exactly what Ben Lovett was talking about here in lines 13, 14. Just that those tours that they were on, the crowds got more and more crazy. Like, the hype really became a little bit much.
Yeah, it was big, and eventually it did lead them to performing in really big venues, like one that they're going to talk about here. It says, last year, it performed before an audience of approximately 75,000 people on the main stage at Coachella, which is a big music festival in California, I think. And I think you can even see videos of this on YouTube. I've seen a couple.
It's a lot of people. I'm not sure I've ever seen that many people in one place. but one just English note I want to make is that sometimes we say it when we're referring to a band as a group because it is the band. But sometimes we also say they just because it's not really formal English. But there's more than one member in the band. So you will notice that often those two kind of are used interchangeably. So the band, it played, they played. It's kind of okay both ways. So it is a big deal to play at Coachella, of course, especially in front of that many people.
That's right. Especially performing on the main stage, I believe that is a very, very high honor, especially it seems like they did that when they were still gaining popularity. So
right.
The fact that they weren't as big a hit as they are right now and they played at Coachella, that's really cool.
It's pretty remarkable, especially considering their style. And that's what our next reading is going to get into. So please join us as we start the second column on page 39.
Unlikely pop stars. Before long, the London-based group, which also includes singer-guitarist Marcus Mumford, 25, bassist Ted Duane, 28, and banjo player Winston Marshall, 25, had all but exhausted the tunes on Say No More. For 2012, it needed new ones. And I'm sure the third, fourth, and fifth records will happen the same way. Lovett continued, speaking recently after a show at Cairns, Australia. There was absolutely zero calculation with Babel. No one ever came into the studio and said, "Turn that banjo up and we'll make you into pop stars." Yet pop stars are precisely what the band's members have become. In October, Babel entered Billboard's album chart at number one, scoring what was then the year's biggest sales week, bigger than Justin Bieber and Madonna, with more than 600,000 copies sold, according to Nielsen SoundScan. So, how did these London lads carve out such an impressive space, singing original songs about struggle and redemption?
So, we are calling Mumford and Sons unlikely pop stars. First of all, when I think of a pop star, I don't think of a man with a banjo.
Definitely not. When I think of a pop star, I think of, you know, a young guy or girl who's just dressed up and they're one band, you know, it's them singing with maybe backup dancers.
Right.
And
like the Katy Perrys and the Justin Biebers and the Beyoncés.
Selena Gomez.
Right.
She's popular.
Bruno Mars. You know, that's what I think of when I think of a pop star. And so to me, I don't really think of this group in the same category. But we see that partly just, you know, the popularity of this group, it kind of pushed them in this direction that they weren't really expecting either. But now we sort of introduce the band as we talk about just what happens after you release a first album. So before long, first of all, we say the London-based group, but they're not really all originally from London.
No, I think they're probably from around different places in England. I'm not really sure where they're all from specifically, but probably not all necessarily from London.
Mm-hmm. I think at least one of them is probably American, but there's some conflicting reports on that. Anyway, they met and got together and started their group in London. So that's why we call them a London-based group. And again, it includes the members.
Yes, there's Marcus Mumford, Ted Duane, Winston Marshall, and then we mentioned earlier Ben Lovett.
Right. Now, Marcus Mumford is the one who sort of heads up the band. It's his name that's in the title. But also, he's turned 26 by now. They're all quite young, actually.
Yeah.
So talented, but pretty young. Now, what had happened to them at this point?
Well, they had all but exhausted the tunes on Sigh No More. I guess when we say all but, it's like they were kind of coming just right up to that boundary. They hadn't quite exhausted them yet, but much longer and it would have been enough.
Okay, good. Now, usually when I think of exhausted, I think of me at the end of a long day, you know, collapsing onto my bed like, oh, okay, I'm done. What do we mean when we say a song is exhausted or tired?
I think of it means it's been played too many times. It's overdone. We've listened to it so many times that we don't really want to anymore.
Right. And this is normal. Often when I get a brand new album, I'll listen to it nonstop for like 3 weeks. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I need a break. And so if you want to be successful, you need to keep offering more to your audience, of course. And talking about this, Lovett has an interesting comment.
Yeah, he says that he's sure that the third, fourth, and fifth records will happen the same way. Like, they just come to the point where they need new music to work with, and that's when they'll write more stuff, or that's when they'll at least release more things.
Mm-hmm. He says there was absolutely zero calculation with Babel. What's calculation?
Well, it's when someone comes in and you... our definition says you judge the value of something by using information. So what I think it means here is that no one ever told them how to be successful. They did their thing. They played their music and they rocked it.
Good. Now, a lot of pop stars are sort of maybe overly produced, where there's people telling them what to do and how to do it. And, well, if you change this a little bit, you'll get more listeners. And if you turn this up, it'll make you more money, right?
Yeah, I think that's the way it's done a lot now, is that everyone is – most pop stars are going for what they think people will like. But Mumford & Sons, I feel like, just puts it out there and they say, if you like it, great. But right. If you don't, we're still going to play.
Yeah, so. Good. And I like Lovett's comment here because he's making a bit of a joke.
Yeah, at the end of this little bit on the page, it says, no one ever came into the studio and said, turn that banjo up and we'll make you into pop stars. So just like Catherine was saying, no one told them exactly what they need to do. If you highlight these different instruments that you have that are unique, that's what's going to make you popular. No one really did that. They just came and did what they kind of loved to do, and that's how it happened.
Yep, and what they love to do is pretty amazing. We have another clip, don't we, of one of their songs?
Yeah, we have one of their biggest songs so far, I think, called I Will Wait, which is from their second album, Babel, and I'm sure you will really enjoy this one as well. It has some great energy to it, but it also has some very kind of meditating and reflecting kind of lyrics to it. So give it a listen.
Well, I came home like a stone, and I fell heavy into your arms. Days of darkness, which we've known, will blow away with this new sun. But I
Yeah, that doesn't really sound like pop music to me, but once again, they really are pop stars.
As much as I hate to admit it, they are. they have gotten so popular lately that they have been categorized as pop stars. Yeah, everyone
right.
likes to listen, I think.
Right, so. Pop just being short for popular, mm-hmm. which essentially just means people know who you are. They've heard your music. Everyone enjoys it, and we have some evidence for that.
Right. In October, Babel entered Billboard's album chart at number one. So Billboard, you know, always lists the most popular, what people are listening to the most in terms of music, bands, singles, anything like that. So they were right at the top when they came out with their album.
Which is especially significant considering who they beat.
That's right. It says that they beat out Justin Bieber and Madonna, which I think is a huge deal because those two are just some really well-known names in the musical world. So
right.
I think that's interesting.
Yes, and their numbers, it's more than 600,000 copies sold, according to Nielsen SoundScan, which is a company that always keeps track of sales of records. It's pretty remarkable. So we end with a question today, which is a little bit of a – it's kind of a teaser for tomorrow.
Right. It says, so how did these London lads, or boys really, carve out such an impressive space? And when they say that here, I think they are partially talking about sales. They're making a mark on the whole music market at this point. But they might be saying some other things, too, with that question.
Well, and I think sales and popularity, I mean, of course they go together.
That's right. I think that whenever this band first entered the scene, maybe people did not expect them to be popular or as popular as they are. So they've created a good space for themselves in the music world.
Right. People know who they are and they're finding success and doing well. But while they're there, they're singing songs on different topics than we usually hear.
Right. They're singing original songs, their own songs about struggle and redemption. And redemption, you know, is just kind of going from a lost point and being saved or found eventually in some way. You can think of it in that way.
Right. And a lot of their lyrics are very full of this kind of theme. And we have an example.
That's right. Another song called Awake My Soul is a great example of the lyrics having struggle and redemption. It talks about how you should get through life happily.
That's true. And I think it also has a lot to say about the value of people and of our souls. So let's hear it.
Lend me your hand and we'll conquer them all. But lend me your heart and I'll just let you fall. Lend me your eyes, I can change what you see. But your soul you must keep totally free. Ha, 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 ha.
All right, that's just a sample of Mumford & Sons, but we have more for you tomorrow, so come back and join us then.